Deep calls to deep, Psalm 42:7. At the sound of your waterfalls, Revelation 1:15, his voice was like the sound of many waters. He's been calling and releasing a sound that people's spirits are beginning to resonate with. That sound has been released for a number of years, and I think people's spirits are drawn to the sound, even though they don't know what it is at all. And the sound, this sound has a vibration, a frequency, a symbol, a formula, a color, a fragrance, and it's being released out of heaven. And some people connect with it in one way, and some people connect with it in another way. And the sound is drawing people home, to their heavenly home, to engage in new heavenly alignments, in new levels of heavenly authority. It's drawing people to experience going beyond the veil. That's the key. And the symbol that I've been drawing is like this covenant symbol, infinity symbol. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I found myself in worship just drawing this shape. You know, I didn't know I was doing it until one day I was sort of like, what am I doing? Yes. You know, and I was drawing this shape. And I said, what is this shape? And along with it came a series of four notes. And it's come out in a lot of songs recently. And it's like, whoa, oh, oh, sort of thing. It's sort of that, whoa, oh. And it's like a lot of Bethel songs have had that, whoa, oh, oh thing in them. And so the people are sort of writing this thing as sort of taglines or things. And it doesn't mean anything in the actual song. It's just whoa or whoa, oh, oh. And I had this song every time I would worship. And with this symbol, I would start singing these just sort of notes. Not, you know, and it would be just, and my spirit would like groan with it almost and release this sound. And then I associated with this symbol. And it's like, what is this sound? What is this saying? And it was like, the four faces. And it was like going in, coming out, going in, coming out. It was the rhythm of life. Yod, hey, vav, hey. Now, I didn't sort of get it exact because it was almost like a groan. It was all my spirit was trying to release something. My head didn't have any concept of what it was. And my body just responded by sort of drawing pictures in the air, sort of like, you know, and sometimes they're down here and I'm like, wow, this is really weird. But it's this sound. And it's a sound that's being released. I'm going to go into more films. I shared a lot of films this morning. But this one, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Fourth Kind, whatever it is. In that film, there was a sound or a series of notes. And a picture or a thing of a mountain. And this guy made it out of mashed potato. He saw it out of everything in this thing. And he was drawn to this place. And it drew him to this place where he engaged in the story, obviously with all of ETs, and he then went off into another realm with them. And this is what this is like. It's a drawing of your spirit to engage with something which is going to take us into a whole new level. And it's being released. And this is really, I think, where we're beginning to connect, because people with like-minded who've heard that sound are all suddenly starting to connect with each other around the world. Because it's this, okay, what is this? And how do I find out? And someone else seems to be talking about this. And we're then all starting to connect. And then we're starting to help each other and encourage each other. So I believe in terms of prophetic timetable where we are, you know, these sort of overlapping periods of time, you know, we have this whole thing here, you know, this call to intimacy, sonship, this royal identity. That's been going on for a long time. You know, it's like, you know, early 80s, you know, then whole thing took off with Toronto and that sort of intimacy, calling Father Heart of God, soaking, you know, all that stuff started to call people to intimacy. And, you know, then after that, you had very quickly this whole thing of fire and repentance and, you know, and that sort of got out released, particularly at Brownsville. You know, and the sort of the revival things there was all about this sort of intense presence of God that just sort of like, wow, I need to repent. I need to get all this stuff out of me, you know. But then that whole thing, you know, sort of this gathering, removing of stumbling blocks is where some people are right now. And the next phase is the judgment of God's household, you know. And I think, you know, we're at that place where the fire of God is coming. And it's coming in different ways to different people. But that fire is basically saying, are you willing to be purified and refined? And then are you willing for that to go deeper? So that not just you are purified and refined, but everything that you're doing and all the structures and everything you are is going to come under the judgment of God, where God says, this doesn't look like anything that I've designed. So are you willing to leave go everything that I've not designed and embrace something that I'm going to show you, which is new? And then as a result of that, and in that time, the releasing of the Joshua generation, mentors called by God to be spies who go into the land and experience something before everybody else and then give a good report and says, come on, we can go in, rather than a bad report and says, no, we can't. That is what's being released right now, so that eventually when we have a group of people who are gathered around blueprints and have places that will receive the harvest, you're going to get, you're going to get there a harvest of harvesters, a harvest of laborers. And I believe that's the billionfold harvest that's been prophesied. You're going to see that harvest come in. It's going to be a limited period of time, and it's going to be represented by Joseph having 7 good years and 7 lean years. Mm-hmm. And in the good years, they brought all the things into the storehouses. 20% of it in every storehouse from the community was stored and then became a resource for the world. And it says the whole world came to Egypt because of what Joseph had done. And what did he do? He administered the kingdom. He was put in a position of governmental authority. And where did he come out of? The prison. So we've been in a prison of religion and a prison of stuff. And now we've been brought out of the prison and we're going to administer things and we're going to see 7 years. I'm not saying actually 7 years because I don't believe it's 7 years, but a period where we're going to see an unprecedented harvest come in to places that are ready to receive them. And if we're not ready to receive them, we won't have the harvest. So when that harvest is coming, it's not fixed in time. It's according to whether people are ready for it. And so I really feel we need to be ready for it. And then once the harvest has come in and we're preparing for it, then we're going to have the shaking of everything else, when we're going to live in cities of refuge under the heaven, God of heaven, and under the laws of heaven, completely unaffected by all the shaking of every system that's going on. Mm-hmm. And then the mountain of the house of the Lord is going to be raised up and seen as this is where the government of God is and where true relationship with God is found and expressed. And people are going to stream to it. That's what it says. And all the other hills, symbols of government, are just going to crumble because they cannot cope with the shaking. Because only what will be remain when everything gets shaken is that which is of the kingdom. And everything man-made won't be remaining. So we're in that place of God is releasing and raising up a Joshua generation so that God's judgment can be released. And then in that judgment, he was producing a verdict and he's giving people a choice. Do you want to stay in the wilderness like the Moses generation and die in the wilderness? Or do you want to cross over into a new dimension, a new realm, your promised land, and actually take the land and take back what belongs to you? And I think that's where we are. So that prophetic perspective in 1975 on the 8th of August, there was a prophetic call that went out by Bod Jones that there was a billionfold harvest. That is coming to an end. 40 years, a whole generation is coming to an end on the 8th of August this year. It's a very significant prophetic event. So that whole generation has had an opportunity to respond to that prophetic word and get ready. Most of what I've heard has been misinterpreted what that word really meant. The whole, in that time, since 1975, you've had the whole prophetic movement, you've had the apostolic movement, those orders were released and they failed to equip God's people to engage heaven and become that Joshua generation. They've essentially built their own mountains. So those people in that have been amazing stewards, miracle workers, and we've seen in that time amazing things around the world, awesome things. in terms of signs and wonders, revivals, all that stuff, but they've failed to equip the people. You know, people have not been equipped to do this for themselves, to become people who can hear God prophetically, directly, who can apostolically receive visions and government and administer it, because they've done it from their own mountains. They've built Moses' ministries rather than equip a Joshua generation. Therefore, mediators, which have created dependent people.
Yeah.
And that is why God is saying, no more.
Yeah.
It's like the authority is removed from that and it's going to be released to people who are the opposite. They're releasing people into hearing God for themselves, being able to engage heaven for themselves, find their vision and destiny for themselves, outwork it for themselves in relationship with other like-minded people. Totally different. So Moses' generation built mountains of ministry under the cloud of anointing rather than equip people to engage God in the cloud. And when the cloud moved, they've actually built something solid and can't move with it, which is where they are. So they've produced covering ministries rather than foundational floors to release living stones into their destiny. So anything that's a covering is between you and God. Obviously, if he's covering you, then you've not got access other than go through the covering, which is totally what God never intended to happen. So those foundational ministries will release people to go directly to God for themselves, not create dependence on, you need to hear God through me. And all the prophetic conferences of coming in and getting your prophetic word, and people, oh, I want to hear God, I want a word from God. Oh, I hope he's going to prophesy over me. And I've been there, I've done it years ago. I hope he picks me out. You know, I mean, I always went to all the meetings with the Kansas City prophets and, you know, Bob Jones and Paul Kane and all these guys. And it's like, am I going to hear God for today? Is he going to pick me out? Never did. You know, we always seem to pick the same sort of people out. But I'm not saying they weren't correct in what they were doing in terms of prophesying. They absolutely were. But they never equipped anyone to hear God for themselves. So everyone went to the next prophetic conference and the next thing, hoping to hear their prophetic word rather than, well, didn't God not speak to you? Are you not a sheep that hears the shepherd's voice? You know, so we're in that place where this stuff is getting exposed. So building in the wilderness rather than preparing a generation of forerunners, spies who'd cross over beyond the veil. Because that's what Joshua and Caleb did. They went beyond the veil ahead of everybody else, saw the land, saw all this wonderful fruit and honey and, you know, massive grapes and all this stuff. Yeah, saw all the giants. Came back and said, yeah, this is our land. We can go and take it. And the others basically said, whoa, yeah, there's some good stuff there, but there's giants and we're grasshoppers in their sight and ours. We can't take it. And the whole generation from 20 years of old up to the age where, you know, they were in the army, they all died in the wilderness because they failed to embrace crossing over. Joshua and Caleb obviously did, but had to go for another 40 years of wandering, in which obviously they learnt to linger in the presence of God and in the tent of meeting and go up the mountains and do other things. So they're mentors for the billionfold harvest or harvesters to equip and release people for their supernatural inheritance. They were never released, because their focus was on the harvest rather than equipping for the harvest.
Yes.
So the focus was actually on young people mostly. And all the focus of places like IHOP and places was all about, yeah, the billionfold harvest of young people. Where did it say young people? It actually wasn't about young people. It was about all people who are coming in. And if you actually think about the harvest that's coming, it's not about young people. It's about people who aren't yet believers.
Yes.
And that can be from, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, whenever they can get saved, up to 100. You know, there's no age limit. And Joshua was 80. Odd. You know, and Caleb said he was 84 and he was still going in and out to war and taking the high ground and getting rid of the giants, because he had in his heart, this territory belongs to us and we're supposed to administrate it and actually see the nation begin to occupy their inheritance. Now, in doing that, if you think about who came afterwards, it's about a group of people who can be many ages. Because anyone from 19 downwards then went 40 years in the wilderness. So when they next came to cross, you had Joshua and Caleb, who were quite old from our perspective generally, but not old from God's perspective, because there's no age limit to what we can do in the kingdom. And then you had anyone from 19 or 20 up to 59 who were then part of the army who were going to go in and take the land. Because you could have had 19-year-olds who weren't responsible, and then you could have had people lower than that, obviously younger, from naught, could have been people in the womb. So, you know, we've seen people focus on youth rather than on the generation that will prepare the youth. And that really is where we are. We're into looking at a united generation of people who are going to go in with Joshua and Caleb, who are going to be part of that Joshua generation, who will take their inheritance, who will embrace the inheritance that God's got for them beyond the veil, beyond the Jordan. You know, when I was a kid, you used to sing songs about going beyond the Jordan, about going to heaven. And I used to think, you know, when scripturally I sort of think, no, that's not what it means. Actually, it does. It just means you don't have to die. We cross over into a new spiritual dimension of authority, which is beyond the veil. That's our supernatural inheritance as God's people to operate in heaven and on earth. So what God is calling for is the establishing of ARCs, which are Apostolic Resource Centers, Habitations of God, Gardens of God, Cities of Refuge, Embassies of Heaven on Earth, Storehouses, all sorts of names that people are prophetically using to describe basically the same thing. Places that will gather the harvest, equip them in supernatural dimensions of living, and then send them out from a place of security, which is going to take ground, and that place will live under the laws of heaven and not earth. Because an embassy operates under the laws of the nation that sends it, not the nation it goes to.
Yeah.
And we're not being sent for diplomacy. We're sent for dominion and conquest and subduing and overcoming and creating and seeing the kingdom of God fill the earth. You know, but we do it from a place of security where we operate under the laws of heaven, completely independent and separate from the shaking of everything else which is going to take place, because we're going to demonstrate the kingdom, health, wholeness, provision, powered sources, food sources. And we'll see supernatural as well as naturally supernatural events. It's like if we need water, we'll create water, we'll open an aquifer for the deep, or we'll see a river change course. We will do supernatural things to see this territory blessed and operating under God's kingdom. Because we have the authority to do it, to terraform, to change, to transform, to frame our surroundings. So what we're learning to do individually in our little lives and what we do is to prepare us for when we're part of a thing who's going to actually do that in the community and change the actual concept of what the community is. And there's so much more that we're coming, and God is calling us to do it. And we're going to be living in an overlap of heaven and earth. So like, well, are we in heaven? Are we on earth? Because we're living in that environment where heaven is ruling. So we're living in heaven on earth. Living under a higher spiritual authority and the laws of heaven, not the laws of earth. That is really what the order of Melchizedek's about. The ministry mandate to reflect the four faces of God, the fullness of his government on the earth as it is in heaven. The iron, the ox, the eagle and the man is how God administrates, rules, governs. Priestly, kingly, apostolic, prophetic. Now, in 2005, I had a vision. This is a long time ago, 10 years ago. I had a really powerful vision. I knew it was really significant, although I didn't understand it. And I was sort of in the air looking down, and I saw coming out of the desert, it was a really barren place, out of the desert came a mountain. And it started to be raised up. And it was like rising up. And then it stopped. And I sort of looked down. And on the top of the mountain, I could see something. And what I saw was a shape like that. Like a square, but on its side. And immediately, I looked at this and I thought, that looks like a boxing ring. You know, as I was looking down on it, on top of a mountain, it looks like a boxing ring. And then I saw three words on the corners, praise, prophetic, and prayer. And I was thinking, okay, so what is that? And I think, well, I know what that words mean. But I had a sense that this was something more significant than that. Then I actually saw, on the other corner, pastoral. And what God was saying in this was, there is a conflict between what I want to bring government into the kingdom and how ministry should be done with pastoral style of ministry. And so what he said was, you need to redefine those words, because what you think they mean, they don't mean. So redefine them. So I'm like, how do I redefine what words mean? I don't know. So I shared this with our leadership, and I said, well, what do you want to do about it? Now, we did exactly what you would think we did, which is completely wrong, but because all we knew what to do was, right, we'll form a prophetic team, and we'll form a prayer team, and we'll form a pastoral team and a praise team. And the praise team never, ever got formed, because they're always awkward people, praise people. They never want to do what you want them to do, which is great, because they're the only people who didn't get tainted by anything. And so they set this stuff up, and it was like, and I said, this is about redefining. So seek God what this really means. Well, of course they really didn't. They just carried on doing stuff that they thought did. Now, what we found, that in the redefinition of these words that came, because I didn't get involved with any of those groups, I just basically said, well, I need to look. So I was seeing what was happening from a perspective. So this was how we were going to do ministry. This was how we were going to provide leadership. Well, we're going to use these four words and whatever. Now, I didn't sort of understand the concept of it and how real this battle became. And actually became a battle in my own family, because my wife is very, very pastoral. She's got mercy gift. Redemptive gift, mercy. I have never accepted the title pastor, because I'm very, very, very not a pastor. And therefore I carried an apostolic gift, and we continually conflicted, not in our personal relationship, just in how we saw how things should be done, or how ministry should be done. It was like, it was always the people. And for me, it's always the vision. And it was like, So then it was like, what happened was, in seeking God about this and in recognizing, look, there is a battle going on here for how are the foundations of things set? Are they pastoral or are they apostolic? Then we had these words redefined. So apostolic, kingly, prophetic, and priestly. Now, I had no idea about the tabernacle in heaven or the order of Melchizedek or any of that stuff. Nothing. Lying ox, eagle, man. It was just like completely off my radar. This is back in 2005-06. So no idea about any of that stuff. But something was birthed in my spirit that says, this is going to be something that's taking place. There is conflict come in between how the church is governed. And we had that conflict. And we had that conflict even when we actually started to understand what those things were. We still had that conflict. And it's a challenging conflict between those things that take place. And that's what the church is in. You know, most of it is led by pastoral ministry rather than apostolic ministry. And I'm not talking about apostolic ministry as in fivefold ministry. I'm talking about heavenly apostolic ministry. But the conflict is there. And so this is a description of servant leadership. Yes. Who serves in a prophetic, apostolic, kingly, and priestly way. Completely together in unity, government of heaven, king, apostolic, prophetic, but agreed on earth with the priestly so that that could be manifested on earth as a window. Because you have a triangle, you have government, but you have no window. To have a window, you need a fourth point, which is always the agreement between heaven and earth, which is the priestly function. And so now we have our bench of three, which now we understand what this is talking about. And then we had no idea. That's why it's a triangle on one side that creates a square or diamond when you have the other point added. So I think the church is very much in that place overall. Pastorally, earthly versus apostolic, heavenly government. The battle is still raging to establish a shadow that reflects heavenly government on the earth, so that God can occupy that shadow with living stones. God spoke to me and said this: do you want to host the people of God or the God of the people? And this is the crux between pastoral ministry or apostolic ministry. Mm-hmm. If you host the God of the people, then God of the people sets the agenda and we follow him. If you host the people of God set the agenda and you have to serve them and pander to them and be frightened of them going, because you'll lose your tithes and you lose your offerings, and it's control and manipulation. And God wants us to host him, and he will touch the people, and he will transform the people, and he will change the people if we have an atmosphere where his presence is. But if we create an atmosphere that only caters for people, not that I don't love people and want people to come into the fullness, but you do it in a totally different way. You encourage them, you nurture them, you disciple them, you release them. You don't control them, you don't tell them what to do, you don't sit over the top of them, covering them. So we're in that place. You know, so you have this whole thing, this alignment that we've seen before, priestly and kingly in heaven, that produces an ark, apostolic and prophetic on the earth, that produces an ark, so that there's a reflection of heaven on the earth. And then you have this picture of how the government gets formed, priestly and kingly. In heaven, God has a blueprint for everything. Everything has a blueprint in the purposes of God. Our lives have a blueprint. We call it our scroll or our destiny. Every ecclesia, every area, every city, every nation, everything has a blueprint. And there are layers and layers and layers of them, and they're all in the purposes of God. So when blueprints get released, when priests and kings come together in priestly, royal priesthood, if like in heaven, you have the light of God that shines down on the blueprint. Now, when you shine down on something, what happens? You form a shadow. So on the earth, a shadow forms of that blueprint. And some people catch that shadow. They get vision. They get inspired by things. Now, the problem is, then most people, of what they've got that vision, they, rather than doing what they should do, which is then become a foundation, which is apostolic and prophetic foundations, which release people into that shadow to find who they are, their destinies within the shadow. And that can be for my life, because I need to do that for myself. So I need my bench of three, soul, spirit, body, together in unity. That can be in the church. So the government of heaven is a reflection of heaven, not a copy of it. And as I said before, what people have done is they've got a blueprint. They've seen something of heavenly vision quite often, because that's what apostles do. They get some apostolics doing things from heaven, but they didn't see how to actually administer it and govern it correctly. So what they did is they took their shadow and they built a mountain on top of it, and then they sat on top of the mountain. And therefore people had to be fitted in the shadow under them, and there was nowhere for them to go. Because there's nowhere for them to go. Where can you go if you're down here? Well, you sort of you can work your way up the food chain. And so many people have spent years and years trying to get up the food chain. House group leaders is hoping someday they'll be elders, leaders, or maybe they'll get full-time ministry. We're all in full-time ministry. So this sits on top and blocks everyone fulfilling their eternal destiny. If you go back to the previous slide, this releases everybody. There's nowhere. This can go on and on and on, can't it? It's wider and wider and wider. More and more people can become filled with what God's purpose is. And of course, you only want people who feel called to that shadow. It's not about, we want to get, we say bums on seats, but it's like, you know, but it's like you're not just after people. You want the people whose destiny coincides, because you can encourage them, and that will actually be the shape that you should be. And doing the ministry that you should do and impacting the community, because vision is together, because purpose is together, and you have a relationship. You know, that's what it's about. It's not, okay, well, we have this job in the church that we need someone to do. So we'll put out a notice and then we'll manipulate them until someone does it. It's like, that's what people do, because they need things to keep the thing going. Rather than to help people fulfill their destiny. So when it comes to it, like for us, as a church, we don't have certain ministry. The reason we don't have certain ministry, because we have no one who's gifted or feels called to that ministry. So we don't do it. So we've never had children's ministry. So we don't have hardly any children. Now, people are always saying, well, if you had children's ministry, you'd get families come. I said, I don't want families here because we're going to babysit their children. If they want to be here, they need to be here because God's called them here. And actually, if they are called to be here, they'll look after their own children, because I'm not responsible for their kids, they are. But actually, a lot of churches put all their money in looking after kids, because that will draw families in, more, bring more money in, so they can create their more structures, and then they have these big structures, and then they've got this organization, and they're then hosting the people of God, not the God of the people. And that creates what people have built. Structures where they're on top of them, controlling what goes on, getting people to fit in to serve what their vision is, rather than to release people to find where they are. So when I started teaching this stuff, I gave people the freedom to leave. For 3 months, I shared, this is our vision. This is where we're going. This is what God's called us to do. This is how we're going to get there. It's like we're on a journey. I have no idea how we're going to get there. We're on a journey. We'll suddenly find probably all the things we're doing now will all change because God will give progressive revelation. And actually, probably what we're doing now is our revelation now, but it may not be in a few years' time. So we're going on a journey. But we're going on a journey which is heavenly, and we're going to engage in heaven. It's like, and I said, if you don't feel called to that, we really bless you to be somewhere else. Because you will only hinder and you will only feel aggrieved because this doesn't fit in with what you feel called to do. And actually, this is what God has told us to do. If he hasn't told you to do it, well, you shouldn't be here. You know, so I was encouraging people to leave. Now, a few couples did leave, and the relief when they left was amazing. It's like, because the disapproval people bring creates an oppressive atmosphere that you're under and you don't realize it. And then when it's gone, it's like, wow. How? And the first Sunday we had after these people left, the angels turned up. It was a celebration, a party. I mean, it was like amazing. Everyone felt like they were floating on air because we'd just been under this cloud. Yeah. So getting people to go is important. You need the people that God wants to have with you so that you're in relationship together. And you then release them, encourage them. You don't do that by being on top of them. Now, I also apply that to me. I can't be on the top of my own mountain. God is on my mountain, and then in him, I learn to rule. I don't govern my own life. He governs it, and then he teaches me to govern as a son. And he entrusts me with more and more freedom to do that, the more and more trustworthy I become, when the more transformed I am, because I am now not operating out of the flesh and out of the soul, but being led by the Spirit. So God has given everyone an invitation to come deeper. I've felt that invitation, you know, over the last few years, just come deeper. Deep calling to deep, come deeper, come deeper. There's more and more that you never even imagined or dreamed or thought in me. Come deeper. Keep coming deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So virtually every experience I've had over the last few years has got deeper and deeper and deeper. I thought the amazing experiences I had in 2010, I couldn't top those. They were just the beginning. It's just gone deeper and deeper. So I've had three levels of intimacy in every experience almost. It's just taken, well, three is a good number, and it represents Father, Son, and Spirit. Because there's always depths to go. And I found I had deeper baptism into the Father, deeper baptism into the Son, deeper baptism into the Spirit. It just took me deeper and deeper into then knowing who I am. Because the deeper I got, deep was calling out to deep in me. And the deep in me wanted to know, who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose? Who's my identity? And the deeper I got, and the deepest place I ever got was back into the heart of God in eternity. And then I found who I was. I could see it because it called me and drew me to go deeper and deeper until, wow, now I'm at that place. And then it's opened up all this other stuff. And I'm like, wow, you know, stuff I wouldn't have even dreamed about 5 years ago. Even having been to heaven for weeks on end, I wouldn't have even dreamed of the stuff I'm seeing now. But I went deeper and I kept following the sound, drawing me deeper and deeper and deeper into him, deeper into the Father's heart. So I could cultivate and brood and incubate desire, which is what we talked about last night. Incubating that desire for him, for more of him, to know him more, so that I could know myself in reflection for knowing him. So then I got this whole thing of seeing it as it was in the beginning, to manifest that into what is now, to transform what will be tomorrow. So that everything will come out from the depth of his heart. You know, and then essentially, the whole thing of engaging with him, his works, his will, his ways, his heart, it's all about him. You know, starting off with his works, because often that's what we see first. You know, I think the people of Israel saw the works of God, and Moses saw the heart of God, the ways of God. So what I saw on the surface was all the things God was doing. Then I went deeper and deeper, and I saw, well, why was he doing it? And he shared his heart and revealed what he was doing, so to know his ways and to know him. To know the depths of his heart. And his heart, you know, is filled with love. Awesome, awesome love. Amazing. To know the love of the Father. You know, and growing up, having never known a love of a father, I can tell you, it is amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. And that call then is, if I know the love of the Father, then I must be a son. So I'm called to sonship. And it unveils that he's my father and I'm his son. I've been adopted in his family. And now I'm part of his eternal purpose for the whole of the created order, which is just amazing. Romans 8:19 was really what it's about. For the anxious longing of creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. You know, and I was telling someone the other day of how I was taken out into a black hole and went on the event horizon of a black hole and felt a groan, felt a sound, and thinking, I'm not sure anything can escape a black hole. And so I went back, having had this encounter, went back and checked it out on Google. Google's a really good source of stuff. You know, sound coming from a black hole. It's a B flat, 57 octaves lower than the lowest B flat on a piano keyboard. Literally, scientifically. And that's the groan saying, come and fill me. Come and get rid of this blackness. Come and answer the groan of creation. So that creation itself will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. You know, that verse just absolutely blows my understanding and conscious perception right now. The freedom of the glory of the children of God. The whole of creation. Whole of those 800 billion galaxies, or how many there are. The whole of those how many trillion stars. And all the angels that go with them. And everything else that's created is going to be brought from its corruption, which is why there's dark matter and dark energy, which makes up 70 to 80% of the whole universe. They'd know there's a huge amount that they can't find in the universe because it doesn't make any mathematical sense. And it's, they call it dark energy, dark matter. Well, it's because the light was removed when a third of the angels fell. And God wants us to bring light because who are we? Sons of light. You are the light of the world. You to be the light of the galaxy. Now, it's an amazing thing to go and birth a galaxy out on the edge of the universe. You know, I've done that once. No desire to do it again right now because I get to four on all these things and then don't get to go back and play, you know, because I'm going to go to teach other people to go and do it. That's what I do all the time. You know, yes, I can legislate. Yes, I've made laws, but I get to do it once or twice and then I got to teach other people to do it. God won't let me do it. So, and my soul a few years ago would have been, oh, I want to go out there and start doing this stuff again. It's like, wow, what's it like? You know, and this galaxy came out of my innermost being. Yeah. And it formed. Do you know what shape it formed?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was like, wow. And it felt like that. Then it was like, okay, don't get caught up in that. And that's how God starts. So I've never gone back. Don't need to go back. Sometimes I go and look to make sure everything looks all right, you know. Yeah, but actually, we need to get our conscious understanding of what is possible expanded. Yeah. To be the limited, taking the limits of religion and the things that have been put on us to expand into sonship. What did Jesus do? Speak everything into being. So as his brothers and co-heirs, what do we get to do? Creatively release things in the same way, out of desire in our hearts. And so everything needs to come into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. So this whole thing of coming around the tabernacle, engaging the four faces and the order of Melchizedek is so important. And as we learn to do it, it will help us come into what God is doing. God is raising up a new order in the kingdom. The order of Melchizedek, the old fivefold ministry order is ended. Moses' generation and Joshua's generation are now starting to clash. Now, you've had that very recently in a major public event that's brought this to the surface, and that's just the first one. There's going to be lots of others that come because this is where we are. And as the next 3 months comes and we get into August, then that generation will have ended. And those that have chosen not to cross over, suddenly God is going to leave. So the Joshua generation were forerunners who mentored the next generation into their inheritance. All about the next generation, all about bringing others, not about maintaining what you've got. So we're called to be part of that Joshua generation, to raise it up, to release it, to be part of it, to be forerunners, to embrace progressive revelation of God's kingdom, called to leave the old religious institutional ways behind in the wilderness where they belong and embrace the new kingdom ways in the promised land. What sort of people do you need to be to do that? People who are going to fulfill their destiny. The Joshua generation were a people with a different spirit. That's what it said, Caleb, different spirit. Now, I've done a whole teaching on Joshua generation, if you've not heard it, and what I've not explained. There's 40 characteristics that I received when I was on the fast, which is will give you some insight into what sort of people you need to be. But we need to be an apostolic people. You know, God placed apostles first, it says.
Yes.
Why? Because they go first. They make a way. They don't go first and then stop everyone going. They go first and encourage everyone else to go. And then they encourage people to go further, beyond. So, Jesus-centered people, creation lovers, not just this planet, but the created order. We have to see that's our responsibility. If it's going to come into freedom, we have to love it. Pioneers, adventurers, servant leaders, disciples, you know, you have to be willing to go beyond. You know, not being stuck where you are, not in the comfort zones. Sometimes you have to be willing to go not knowing where you're going. Just following the sound, being called deeper and deeper. Colossians 3, 1 to 2. Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, if, have we?
Yes.
Yeah. So, what are we going to do? Keep seeking the things above. Where Christ is seated, at the right hand of God, and of course we're with him, set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. That represents the key revelatory principle of all these new ways. Where we are, and keep operating and thinking from there, not thinking about going to and fro, trying to do everything on the earth, but going into that place and seeking things above, which is where the kingdom is operating from, where the government of God begins to come, where God's purposes are there. So God is raising up this Joshua generation of leaders, mentors, disciples, who will be committed to leading and equipping the next generation in, into a supernatural lifestyle. Because that's what we've got to equip people in, to live the same and go further. To freely give what we've freely received, to be blessed, to be a blessing. That's the characteristic. Everything I've received, I must be willing to give away. Not hold knowledge to myself so I will have control. Because a lot of people know a lot of things and they're not telling people how to do it.
Yeah.
Because if they tell people what to do, how to do it, they'll lose their power. Then no one will be looking at them anymore because everyone will be looking at God. And that is part of where we are and the challenges that people have right now. So it's really about letting people get alongside people, getting alongside other people to equip, mentor them, disciple each other, support each other.
Yeah.
Be together in this.
Yes.
You know, because we help each other. Mm-hmm. You know, when I mentor people online, I love it when people tell me things that I've never seen or been to places I've never been. Because it's like, wow, awesome. Yeah, I'm going to try and go there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's great because it's like, what does that mean? And they say, well, what does it mean? I said, I don't know, I've never been there. What do you think it means? You know, it's like, but I'm really keen to go and find out because it sounds really interesting. You know, so that's about equipping and mentoring, not controlling, not creating dependence. You know, which is why I very rarely now do the things I used to do. So I help people to get to God to do them. So I don't tell people the interpretation of the things or their dreams or their visions or their encounters. I help them sometimes with the symbolism. But actually, no, what is God saying? You know, what is God showing you through that? Go and ask him, because in asking him, what will you do? Build relationship. Know how to hear his voice.
Right.
He'll teach you how to discern. Because what that symbol means to me may not actually be what God is referring it to you. So I'll just give you what my interpretation is, which may or may not be correct, and it may is correct from my perspective, because I understand from my perspective what that means to me. But for you, it might be something totally different. So when you go to the source. Go to the source, because the source will give you what it means for you. So we have to all be willing to go deeper with God, willing to experience new things, willing to understand new truth, willing to pursue new ways, willing to pass that on to others. What is a supernatural lifestyle? Well, it's being like Jesus and more. So John 14:12, I preached this for 2 years. Like every time I could get this verse in anywhere, I got it in because it was so into my spirit. It's like, yeah, he who believes in me. And that was the first thing. Who believe? Do we believe him? Do we actually believe what he's saying? Do we really believe what he says about us? Because then the works that I do, he will do also. And greater works than these, he will do because I'll go to the Father. And of course he went to the Father to what? Open up the veil. Not just to send the Holy Spirit, although he did, but the Holy Spirit came because the veil was open. Now the veil's open, we have an invitation to come through the door. Because didn't he say that I'm the door? And that what would we do? Go in and out? Find pasture? So go in and bring it out. That's the door that we've been invited to go through. Now, no one teaches that that's the door that I've heard, but that is the door. Because he's the door, and his veil is what he's opened up through the cross and opened up through his flesh. So a supernatural lifestyle, doing the earthly and heavenly works of Jesus, the way Jesus did it. And that's the key. The way he did it. In full, intimate love relationship with the Father, who is in him, being able to see, hear, know, do the Father's will. And we get that in John 3:13. That Jesus was dwelling in heaven while on earth, and John 5:19, he only does what he saw the Father doing. So living in heaven on earth simultaneously, being a home for God and a gateway of heaven on earth, and that's the only legitimate way. Jesus did say that some people try and get in illegitimately, so you can get into a realm illegitimately, which is what some people try and do, but actually you'll never be going through the door and you'll never find pasture. God is looking for those who want to be on this journey, an adventure of discovery. And I guess you're here because you want to as well. So what are the new things? Well, there is a new governmental structure patterned after heaven. Number one, both for corporate and individual. I need that government in my life. Corporately, we need that government. Body, soul, spirit in wholeness, connected to heaven, flowing from the inside out. New revelations and understanding of how to expand the kingdom, to subdue and to rule, because that's the mandate. New ways of salvation, experiential. Gone are the days where we can just get someone to pray a prayer. It's like we need to introduce them to the living God in personal experience and encounter that they will never doubt ever again. Because praying a prayer, I don't know where the praying the prayer came from, because Jesus never did it. He just said, come and follow me. That was his invitation. Come and follow me. I'm going. Come with me. Come and know me. Come and walk with me. Come and be disciple. Come and be, as a rabbi, come and be my disciple. And, the whole thing of being yoked together wasn't just the oxen. It was also the picture of the rabbi yoking the disciples, and they followed on after him, eating his dust. And where it says, that thing about, when you enter a place that people don't want, shake the dust off your feet. That wasn't a negative thing. It was actually all the deposit that you've received from me as a rabbi, leave with them so that they can embrace it. Whoa. Totally different concept. Negative again, thinking, oh, God would, people reject him, he's a negative to them. No, God will always love people and want to draw people to him.
Just need something.
Yeah. So new ways of ministry, experiential. That's why I love ministries like Livebusters, which is all about the person hearing from God themselves and God telling them what he wants to do in setting them free. And each step, the God telling them what it's the purpose. And that's the sort of ministry we want. We don't want the counselor to tell people what to do. We want God to tell people what to do. So all we do is facilitate and not become dependent for people. So they become codependent. And a lot of counselor relations become codependent. I get my identity from being the counselor, so I need people to counsel. So if I can keep people coming to me for counseling, then I'm a good counselor. Now, actually, I'm a really bad one. Because actually, they shouldn't be coming to me anymore. Because they should be free.
Job security.
Yeah. So, new ways of teaching, experiential. Which is why I always try and do activations. Because actually, it's not just about hearing, it's about engaging. You know, and I believe when we really get through this stage, there will be very little teaching of the style that we do now, like this. There will be just getting together and engaging and God doing it as we enter in. But now we've got to try and teach people to enter in. When people can enter in, we won't need this. Because we'll just go and hear from God. What's the blueprint? What's the mandate? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to change? So it will become experiential. So I'm on a curve becoming, you know, 80% teaching to 20% things to getting that more and more over to let's go and engage. Let's go and engage. So new ways of prayer, experiential. Not just, God, will you answer my prayer somewhere? Are you, is my words going above the ceiling? Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to meet you face to face at the throne of grace, and I'm going to ask you for help, and I'm going to rest in you, and you're going to do it. Because that's what he does. When we rest in him, he does the work. Experiential. Face to face encounter with God and talk to him. Because prayer is just talking to God and fellowshipping. It's not asking him to do stuff. You know, we've created a whole thing of prayer around that. When you actually look at the Lord's Prayer, you know, it was all about honoring the Father, seeing the kingdom come. Yes, there was, give me this day my daily bread. There was that. But other than that, it was all about focusing on heaven. It was always focusing on God and God's purpose. So it's about relationship, new ways of interceding. And that's a big one. All those intercessionary ministries that are looking to do it from here and engage all the stuff in the heavens are going to find it doesn't work anymore, even if it does now, and most of it doesn't. That's why a lot of intercessors get beaten up and worn out and burnt out, because they're doing it under rather than over. Mm-hmm. So we're going to find that we intercede in the courts, or we intercede at the ark. We, on our mountain, we come as a priest and say, we're going to release blessing from heaven to earth. Mm-hmm. Totally different. New, more effective ways of administrating the kingdom, because we're going to have strategies from heaven. New ways of partnering with the angelic realm, those ministering servants that have been assigned to us. That's going to be a mark of what we do, because we're going to engage with the spiritual realm so that we can operate with that, because that's what God uses, who he uses most of the time to do most of the work that he does. And guess what we should do most of the time? Get the angels to do stuff for us. New ways are about maturity. It's leaving childhood behind and entering into maturity. See, Moses did miracles, parted the Red Sea, food just appeared supernaturally, clothes never wore out, pillar of cloud and fire, they were just children wandering around. You know, when they get to the promised land, when Joshua takes them in, what happens? Did Joshua part the Jordan? Who parted it?
God did, but he stepped in with the priest.
When yeah, they put a foot in there.
They took a step.
So who brought Jericho down?
The trumpets of the priest.
Yeah, all of them walked around, whole nation, 13 times. So they actually participated. Every time else, Moses did it, which is the old order, someone doing it for you. And that's what the old order is about. I'm the prophet, I prophesy. You come to me for a prophecy. I'm the pastor, you come to me. I hear God for you, and I give you my sermon for the week, and then you listen to it, and then you do it. Rather than come and listen and engage with God and let God tell you and then follow him. So everything is different in this new order. It's about maturity. We can't be children anymore. Jesus did the same. He was with his disciples. His disciples saw what he did, and then he sent them out. Who multiplied the food when he fed the 5,000? They did. He just gave them it and showed them what to do. You know, he got them to do miracles. They went out and then came back and reported, and it was like, whoopee. And literally, it says Jesus, the Hebrew word or the Greek word was, they twirled around in the air with excitement and joy because of they were doing the stuff. Exactly. Not, oh, these people are doing it, I'm going to be out of a job. Well, that's exactly what he wanted to be, out of a job. Because he was going back, equipping them to do it on the earth in his way. So new ways.
Pastors are a thing of the past.
I'm saying that pastors were never a thing anyway. Sorry, but there's only one word that can be translated that, and it's actually shepherd. And it was nothing to do with leadership. It was to do about equipping people to shepherd other people. Where does it say that pastors were leaders? Nowhere, because you don't get it mentioned in other ministry gifts or any of the other gifts that were given for the church. It's not there. So, no, I don't believe. Well, I don't believe in the word, and I also don't believe that actually pastors should lead churches, because that's why we get this conflict. Because there, what God wants to release apostolic government from heaven, and pastors want to operate on the earth.
Priesthood over laity.
Yeah. And so there should be no separation between people. See, what I do is no different than what anyone else does. I'm no special than anyone else. Well, I'm just as special as everyone else, actually, because we're all special. And my encouragement is to release people, not to be different from them, separated from them, treated differently from them. You know, and, you know, we should honor and respect all of us. Because if you have a culture of honor, you respect every single person for their redemptive gift, the gifts God's given them, the person they are, and then what will you receive? A reward. You will be blessed by them. Because that's what the culture of honor does. It honors all of us for who we are. And longs for everyone to be outworking who they are. So there's going to be new ways of being salt and light in the community. New ways of being agents of change. Because if all we're doing is floating around in the heavens, and it doesn't have any effect on the earth, then we're not actually doing a very good job. Because we have to see a terraforming and bringing the earth back to its original condition so that the garden, which was overlapping, then filled the earth. So we have to be ways that change history, society, and culture. And the 12 Chancellor's Houses will help us do that, because there's a house called the Affairs of the Nations, where you can go and administer the affairs of the nations. There's another one called Culture House, where you will go to actually affect culture and see it changed. So we're supposed to be agents of change. Are we influenced or are we influencers? That's the question, because we're supposed to be influencers, those who influence others to a totally different way of life. So being children of light. So there's new ways to bring transformation to our communities. We will set up these cities of refuge, which will bring transformation to our community. You know, I like the transformation videos that were around years ago when you saw, you know, all the carrots growing for 3 feet long and, you know, stuff, because you saw supernatural things. You saw change. You saw communities change when the portal was open, when heaven was open. Problem is, they theorized it and formulized it and created things of, well, if you do this and you do this and do this, this is what will happen. Well, it was never about that. It was about each individual place hearing what God said to them and doing it. Yeah. Not trying to copy it. Yeah. It was the principle of hearing from God, which was the key. Not, okay, we're going to do spiritual mapping. We're going to map everything out and then we'll know everything. You know, it's quite useful information, and we will actually use that when we do court cases. Very useful information when you do a galactic council court, because basically you're actually seeing things that are going on, and you have information of what's in the ground and what's in the land and things that you can use. I'm not saying it's not useful information, but it doesn't do it on its own without going to a higher realm to administrate it. So there's lots of things that we've learned to do along the way that we thought was it. This is the new thing. This is the thing. You know, and they wrote a book about it, and everyone tried to copy the book and put it into practice, and most of the time it didn't work, because it wasn't the blueprint or the mandate that they were given. For there, yeah. I mean, you get it lots. I mean, I remember the story of, you know, Bill Wilson, the guy who did in New York the bus ministry. So these buses, and shipped all these kids in every week, and it was amazing. And then wrote a book, started doing conferences and being a major speaker, and everyone started doing it. It didn't work, because he was told to do it, and he was supposed to do it because it was his mandate. Now learn the principle, get a mandate and it'll work. Try and copy someone else's mandate and it won't work very well. You can try and make it work, but it won't be what you're called to do. So we have to establish all things in heaven first so that they can be manifested on the earth. Let's compare the old and the new, because you're going to be asked this stuff. Well, what's the difference? What are you talking about new? Well, prayer from an old perspective, from earth, asking for God's help from heaven, God hears us, perhaps from a distance. Isaiah 64:1. Oh, that you would rend the heavens and come down. In other words, help. Help us. God has already come down, and he's rent the heavens, and he's gone back up, and he's saying, come up here. He's gone into heaven, has opened up the veil for us to come. We can come to the throne of grace. We can come and talk to him. We don't have to cry out hoping that he might hear from somewhere. He will hear because we're talking to him face to face. Revelation 4:1, come up here. Old access to holy places and holy things limited by special people, some people, mediators and priests. That's the old. Only certain people can access the holy things of God. Now, we know very well that the temple was torn in two and all that stuff, but it's not stopped us creating the same Old Testament pictures in our churches and our government today, which is why the pastors are there. They just represented the priests of the old, and actually some of them are called priests. Yeah. That's old, because it's always about mediatorial things, doing something on behalf of somebody else. Mm-hmm. The new is all of us is accessible to everybody, because the veil's torn. It's open. We can come right into the presence of God. We can hear God for ourselves. We don't need anyone to tell us. Now, I'm not saying people can't be teachers or help us or encourage us, but what they should be teachers and helping us and encourage us to do is go and hear God for yourself and showing us how to do it, not doing it for us. So old way of seeking God's help, pray from earth and hoping someone hears, or a new way, go and meet him face to face. And I would encourage you to find the scriptures. We were talking about this earlier, to find the scriptures when people are wanting to know, or you're trying to help people understand that there is something new. Use something that's a familiar script. Don't talk about the Galactic Council or creating a galaxy. It's like, you know, it will probably just fry their brain and think you're a nut job. You know, it's actually talking to them about Hebrews 4:16. You know, you can come boldly to the throne of grace. We'll ask them, well, where's the throne of grace, do you think? And what is to come boldly to it, do you think? Well, it's just praying, and God will answer our prayers. Well, do you think it, does it say that? Or do you just think that that's what it means? So come boldly to the throne of grace and find that stuff. So then it's like, well, this is what it means to me, and actually I've been. And it's in heaven, and God is on it, and he invites you to come and sit with him. And while you're resting with him, he starts doing things for you. So you use scriptures like that to open people's understanding. Hey, what? This is not what I thought. Now, some people will fight and argue with you and try and, you know, convince you that you're wrong because they don't want to change. But some people will think, oh, wow. So you're saying I can go? And then you begin to open other things up. So find those little key things that are meaningful to you, that you have a testimony about, that you can share with others. Because that will be what will open up their hearts. Your testimony of the reality of it, that will encourage them to participate in it.
Not arguing.
So Hebrews 4:14, Jesus, the Son of God, then it's basically, let us draw near with confidence to the throne of grace. Use that. Old ways, like the wilderness, expecting God to do it all for us from heaven. That's the old way. God, will you do it? Now, I asked God to do lots of things, and in the end, he got so fed up, he said, no, sorry, I'm not doing it. It's up to you to do it. Because it's like, oh, dad, will you, dad. You know, and it's like, that's what most of us are like. Will you do it? Oh, please. Please, I'll fast. Then you'll do it. You know, as if we can manipulate God and twist his arm. You know, that's the old way. It's being like in the wilderness, all the manna appeared every day, and it was just God did it all. We didn't have to do anything. We just sort of followed the cloud. In new ways, God has given us responsibility to be co-heirs, partners in heaven, operating as lords, kings, and sons. He says, no, you do it. You have the authority to do it. You're my children. I trust you, and I empower you to go and do it. Your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Old way of thinking, God administers from his throne, we just obey. New way of thinking, we're given thrones to administer from heaven.
Yeah.
Totally different perspective, but old and new. Old ways, being like children, where the parent does many things for and on behalf of the child, which is great when you're a child. I had no problem changing my children's nappies, clearing up their messes, tidying away after them, teaching them how to walk and do stuff. Loved it. No problem whatsoever. You know, now my children are 18 and 20-something, or 21, 24, 26, 30, whatever else they are. I'm not very good on ages with children. How old they are. The eldest I know is definitely 30 because she's just had her birthday. So, but actually, I wouldn't dream of changing their nappy because they shouldn't be wearing one for a start. So there comes a time when God wants children to become responsible adults. You know, we shouldn't be a Christian for 50 years and still be sucking our thumb, saying, oh, please, please, please help. God is going to withdraw his support for the old system so that as that happens, we will have to embrace the new or we will be stuck. Because the old thing will stop being effective. Because God is no longer going to prop it up by his grace. Because God is very, 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 very gracious. And he will extend grace to us for a long, long, long time. And then he's going to say, now it's time. You matured and you became adults, children, sons, rather than babies. So God wants us to grow up to become mature. He's starting to withdraw from doing everything for us to enable us to become adults. Because that's what you do to teenagers, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't do everything you used to do when they're 5 or 6. Now you get them to do some of the chores. You get them to do some of the things. You teach them responsibility. You know, no longer do you have to drive them everywhere because you teach them to drive. You know, you don't do the same things. He wants to manifest his mature sons on the earth. He wants to show us off. He wants to say, hey, look at my children, just like he did to his own son. Opened heaven, this is my beloved son, in whom I'm really pleased. This is my beloved son, listen to him. He wants to do the same for us, to actually show us off to the whole of the rest of the created order. They're all looking to us, because we're the answer to creation's problems. He wants us to fulfill our destinies. So why can't we keep the old ways? Some people say, well, I like it this way. You know, I don't want responsibility. I pay the pastor to do all that stuff and to hear from me and tell me what to do. And that's what some people's view is. Well, we pay the pastor to do that stuff. Because that's what we've been taught. Therefore, I don't need any responsibility. He does it all for us. We pay him. We've got other people do this and other. I just turn up on a Sunday and faithfully put my offering in the offering, and that's it. 2.5 tribes did keep to the old ways. They settled on the wrong side of the Jordan. And there's no record or evidence that the old ways continued to it for them. And actually, there's no record of them either.
That's
so we can't keep the old ways if we want to fulfill our destiny. You know, we can all desire the simplicity of childhood with free responsibilities, but we're called to grow up so we don't just keep drinking milk. If we want to be true sons, you have to chew some meat. Sorry for those who might be vegetarians, but that was the biblical illustration. There is solid meat for those who are mature, not just milk. So, there is coming another sound of a mighty rushing wind that will be a sound that's on a higher frequency, some of the things God has said. That sound will be like when I hovered and vibrated over the matter and space and caused cohesion to take place. There's a sound coming. It is here already. It's whether we will respond to it. This sound will be vibrating at a frequency that will shake the very particles of your being. These are some of the things God said to me in 2013, 14. You will be shaken from the central core of your physical and spiritual structure, and you will be transformed by this new, more infinitely powerful Pentecost. The sound of a mighty rushing wind. Tongues of fire coming. Some new wine. Only if there's a new wineskin. There will be a new order of being, established, restored to my original specifications, living beings containing the very essence of who I am, who will take transformational order. Creation itself will be shaken violently as I come closer, and the spiritual and the natural orders overlap once again. I'm releasing the sound frequency that is calling deep to deep. Many are being drawn into the position, being made ready for the great vibrational wind that's coming. For the new order to be established, the old order must fall away and die. Those who cling to the old order will die along with it, just as Moses and his disobedient, faithless generation died in the wilderness. Sometimes God can say some quite challenging stuff. And I'd encourage you to look at all the red letters that Jesus spoke. There weren't too many nice ones. A few of them, he did sort of say, oh, look after my mum. You know, but other than that, it was sort of things like, you brood of vipers, you whitewashed tombs. You know, blind leading the blind, you know, challenges all around. You know, Jesus challenged. Son, I'm giving this warning again. And God speaks to me like that all the time, son. You know, and when he says son, he knows, I know that, ooh, he wants me to consider it quite strongly. I'm giving this warning again because many are not heeding my wooing. I'm releasing the harbingers. I will remove the stumbling blocks and the obstacles. We really don't want to be a stumbling block and an obstacle. Lawlessness will be removed from my kingdom. There is no room for discord. Oops. You must prepare and be ready as the sound of the mighty rushing wind that will shake the created order will destroy as well as transform. The frequency of the created order itself will be changed by the power of my voice. Use this warning to shake people out of their complacency and call for a heavenly and earthly alignment. Son, herald the sound of a heaven, blow a trumpet, herald a new season, sound the alarm, muster the troops, let the sound reverberate, resonate, draw people. Son, let the lion release its roar, let the eagle soar, let the ox snort, and let the man cry out. Son, hear my heart, focus on the main thing. It's time to, the old fruit, the old season, the old things have ended, both good old things and bad old things. Because there's a lot of good things, but someone said they often are the enemy of the best. I'm going to shake the tree violently to remove you into this new season where the new book will be open, new chapters and new pages will be revealed and initiated. And I've seen that book and it's cool. The blueprints must be clearly established as the foundations and maps to direct you in the seasons ahead. Proclaim and herald a new day, a new season, new depths, new heights, new doors, new chapters will be opened and become accessible. You have a year of preparation before the release of the hunter-gathering angels will fully be authorized. Make everything ready and be expectant with fear and trembling. That year is coming to an end soon. This was obviously less than a year ago, but it's coming soon.
August.
Son, teach people to sit at my feet and draw near to me. I will reveal their destinies in intimate relationship. I'm calling. Help people to hear the sound and become part of my great harmonious sound. A heavenly spiritually united resonance that will answer the groaning of my creation. Teach people to hear the busy sounds, to clear the busy sounds of their cluttered lives, to be able to hear the pure sound that I'm releasing into the atmosphere. Joshua 3:5. Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders amongst you. And then Joshua in 24:14 says, choose you yourselves today who you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's the challenge. You are authorized to issue a call to a new kingdom government to a structure patterned after heaven to go forth. True kingdom government of those willing to embrace their eternal destinies will hear the call and rise up. So I want to finish that, but I will just say those people who are going to rise up are this. Nameless, faceless, hidden ones like Gideon, who will hear the voice of the angel of the Lord declaring their true identity as mighty warriors of peace. It's like Gideon didn't believe it, but the angel called him. And eventually he responded, call for the fathers and mothers who will mentor the next generation, whose hearts will turn to the children of the next generation. So I want to just speak this over you. You close your eyes and just listen to this call to be part of what God's doing. I call your spirit to attention. Just spirit, listen as a true son. I call forth your identity as the Joshua generation, the order of Melchizedek. I call forth your identity, your destiny to manifest God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. I call forth your destiny to fill the earth with God's glory. I call forth your identity and destiny and authority as lords to administer God's rule on earth as it is in heaven. I call forth your identity and destiny and authority as kings to have charge over God's heavenly courts. I call forth your identity, destiny, and authority as sons to stand in God's presence and be displayed on the earth. I call forth your identity, destiny, authority as sons of God to answer the groan of creation, to restore it to original condition and purpose. I call forth the Joshua generation to rise up, take possession of their inheritance. So resonate with that. Respond to the call, calling you into your identity as children of God.
If you've been blessed by this teaching from Mike Parsons, come and visit us on our website, freedomtrust.org.uk, where you'll find a whole range of resources. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, and on our Sons of Issachar blog. God has given us a mandate to raise up a Joshua generation who will enter into the promises of God and lead others to do the same. Are you part of that Joshua generation? If so, check out our Engaging God program. Join a worldwide community of pioneers. Learn how to access God in the realms of heaven and take up your responsibility as a son in his kingdom. Freedom Apostolic Resources. We're here to help you find and fulfill your destiny.